What's up, everyone from all around the world, including Canada, USA, areas of Long Island, plus the five boroughs of Brooklyn, Bronx, Manhattan, Staten Island, Queens. I'm here to help and guide you about Anchor. Anchor is a free hosting site and phone app which is owned by Spotify. It's the easiest, awesome way to make a podcast. Why are you wasting your money paying for a hosting site to promote your podcast with limited storages? Forget about it. Let me break it down to you. There's creation tools that allow you to record, edit, monetize, distribute your podcast. Of course, add music intros, outros, uploading episodes with unlimited storages of your podcast right from your phones, computers, laptops, and tablets. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Plus, you get sponsorship. Isn't that great? It's everything you need to make a podcast, including the listeners supporting your show. Like I always say, if you have a dream of creating and becoming a podcaster host, like myself and individual friends that is co-hosting with me, go download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get a head start. Take advantage of the opportunity that's thrown in your face. If I could do it and reach success, so can you. I'm G Money Stacks. Thank you for listening. Let's go. There you go. Yo, good evening, everyone from the USA, all over the world, Canada, Long Island, plus the five spots of Brooklyn, Bronx, Manhattan, Staten Island, and Queens. I'm your man, G Money Stacks, aka Lonely Nomad, aka the Greginator, YouTuber, Unstoppable, Independent podcaster, host with the most, and rookie podcaster, Queens, New York. And you are now listening and tuning in and rocking with the Meticulous Vajuice Podcast Review Show, episode 43. And we are live and direct on StreamYard and YouTube, alongside with Instagram Live, which is IGTV of Meticulous Vibe Juice Podcast. Make sure you guys follow the show's page on Instagram, alongside with the other shows, Excellent Fun Vibrant Podcast, Off the Meat Rat Chains New York Podcast. I just finished recording episode 103. And myself on the gram, which is G Money Stacks 555 in Queens, New York. And make sure you turn on your notifications so you can see me in action on Instagram Live, which will be featured on IGTV. All right. And speaking of notifications, go to the YouTube channel of Meticulous Vibe Juice Podcast, a review show. Make sure you enable alerts with the notification bell. Stay tuned for more video content, upcoming episodes, previous episodes, including the ones that was already recorded, will automatically be downloaded to the YouTube channel page. And make sure you leave a like and a comment alongside with the episodes. And make sure you basically tell a friend to another friend. Share the video. Share the episodes. And I will get to the audio streaming platforms on the go in a second at the end of the show. All right. Now, how I'm doing mentally, physically, and spiritually, you ask? I'm actually doing all right. Never thought that I was going to be able to make it to 103 of my other show that I just did. And, you know, even though I had to take a little bathroom break and stuff like that, but I think it was worth it. It was worth it. So, yeah, in today's episode, we're going to be talking Ghostbusters, including the 1984 one, part two, and of course, Afterlife, which I will review. And here we go. All right. So, first of all, let me get to this segment right here, which is Music Kool-Aid. Sorry about that. Yeah, Music Kool-Aid. Oops, not wrong one. Shoot. Hold on a second, guys, as I'm looking for. There we go. Yes, Music Kool-Aid is what I was looking for. Yes, you guys know what. No, not Music Kool-Aid. I'm sorry. It's the Chillax Man Cave Popcorn Lounge. That's what I was looking for. All right. And you guys probably know what it is. We don't have any music artists to actually review today, so it's just movies and TV shows. So there you go. Anyway, man, our first film under review is the 1984 Ghostbusters. Yes. So Ghostbusters is a 1984 American supernatural comedy film directed and produced by Ivan Reitman and written by Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. It stars Bill Murray, Aykroyd, and Ramis as Peter Venkman, Ray Stantz, and Egon Spengler, respectively, a trio of eccentric parapsychologists who start a ghost-catching business in New York City. The film also stars Sigourney Weaver
and Rick Moranis, and features Annie Potts, William Atherton, and Ernie Hudson in supporting roles. Yes, yeah, so let me see. Now we're gonna go to the reception. Hang on a minute. Yeah. So Ghostbusters opened to generally positive reviews. Roger Ebert gave the film 3.5 stars out of 4, citing it was it as a rare example of successfully combining a special effects driven blockbuster with sly dialogue. Ebert noted the effects existed to serve the actors' performances and not the reverse, saying comedy. He also cited Ghostbusters as a rare mainstream film with many quotable lines. Writing for Newsday, Joseph Jummis described the Ghostbusters as an adolescent fantasy comparing their firehouse base to the Batcave with a fireman's pole and an ectomobile on the ground floor. So Deseret News, Christopher Hicks praised Rittman's improved directing skills and the crew for avoiding the vulgarity found in their previous films, Caddyshack and Stripes. He felt they reached for more creative humor and genuine thrills instead. He complained about the finale, claiming it lost its sense of fun and was overblown, but found the film compensated for this since it has ghosts like you've never seen. Janet Maslin agreed that the apocalyptic finale was out of hand, saying Ghostbusters worked best during the smaller ghost catching scenes. Dave Kerr wrote that Rittman is adept at improvisational comedy, but lost control of the film as the special effects gradually escalated. Arthur Knight appreciated the relaxed style of comedy, saying while the plot is primitive, it has far more style and finesse than would be expected of the creative team behind Meatballs and Animal House. He singled out editors Sheldon Kahn and David Blewett for creating a sustained pace of comedy and action. Despite bathroom humor, tacky sight gags, Peter Travers described Ghostbusters favorably as irresistible nonsense, comparing the film to the supernatural horror film The Exorcist, but with the comedy duo Abbott and Costello starring. Tom's Richard Schickel described the special effects as somewhat tacky, but believed this was a deliberate commentary on other ghost films. Ultimately, he believed praise was due to all involved for thinking on a grandiose comic scale. Newsweek's David Anson enjoyed the film, describing it as a teamwork project where everyone works toward the same goal of relaxed insanity. He called the film wonderful summer nonsense. Variety's review described it as a lavishly produced film that is only periodically impressive. Reviewers were consistent in their praise for Murray's performance. Gene Sisko wrote that Murray's comedic sensibilities compensated for the boring special effects. Variety singled out Murray for his endearing physical comedy and ad-libbing. Hicks similarly praised Murray, saying he has never been better than he is here. Schnickel considered Murray's character a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to develop fully his patent comic character. Jamies appreciated Murray's dismissal of the serious situations to keep them comedic. The interactions between Murray, Aykroyd, and Ramis were also generally well received. Schnickel praised Aykroyd and Ramis for their grace in allowing Murray to outshine them. Travers and Jamies said the three main actors worked well as a collaborative force. And Hicks described Murray, Ramis, and Aykroyd as wanting to be like the Marx Brothers of the 80s. Conversely, Kerr believed the pair were curiously underutilized, but appreciated Murray's deadpan line readings. The New Yorker's Pauline Kael had problems with the chemistry among the three leads. She praised Murray, but felt other actors did not have enough material to contribute to the story. She concluded, in quote, "Murray's lines fall on dead air." Maslin believed Murray's talents were in service to a film lacking with or coherence. She noted that many of the characters had little to do, leaving their stories unresolved as the plot began to give way to servicing the special effects instead. However, she did praise Weaver's performance as an excellent foil for Murray. Variety described it as a mistake to cast top comedians, but often have team working alone. Having them work alone. Sisko enjoyed the characters interacting with each other, but was critical of Hudson's late addition to the plot and his lack of development, believing it made him appear as only a token box office lure. Accolades. Ghostbusters was nominated for 2 Academy Awards in 1985 for Best Original Song for Ghostbusters by Ray Parker Jr., losing to Stevie Wonder's I Just Called to Say I Love You from The Woman in Red, and Best Visual Effects for John Bruno, Richard Edlund, Chuck Gaspar, and Mark Vargo, losing to Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. That same year, the film was nominated for 3 Golden Globe Awards, Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy, losing to Romancing the Stone. Best Actor, Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy for Murray, losing to Dudley Moore in Mickey and Maude. The Best Original Song for Parker Jr., losing again to I Just Called to Say I Love You. Ghostbusters went on to win the BAFTA Award for Best Original Song. And Edlund was nominated for Special Visual Effects, losing again to Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. It won Best Fantasy Film at the 12th Saturn Awards. Yeah. I'm not even going to go there. Wait a second. Yeah. All right. Now, I'm not sure about what the legacy is going to be, but I'm not even going to really go there on that one. So let's move on to Ghostbusters 2. Okay. Ghostbusters 2 is a 1989 American supernatural comedy film directed and produced by Ivan Reitman and written by Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. The film stars Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Sigourney Weaver, Harold Ramis, Rick Moranis, Ernie Hudson, and Annie Potts. It is the sequel to the 1984 film Ghostbusters and the second film in the Ghostbusters franchise, set 5 years after the events of the first film. The Ghostbusters have been sued and put out of business after the destruction caused during their battle with the Dottie Gozer. When a new paranormal threat emerges, the Ghostbusters reunite to combat it and save the world. All right. After the success of Ghostbusters, Columbia Pictures wanted a sequel but struggled to overcome objections from the cast and crew. As with the first film, Aykroyd and Ramis collaborated on the script, which went through many variations. The pair wanted to convey a message about the consequences of negative human emotions in large cities. They settled on the idea of negative feelings creating a mass of supernatural slime beneath New York City that empowers malevolent spirits. With a budget of $30 to $40 million, filming took place between November 1988 and March 1989 in New York City and Los Angeles. Production was rushed compared to the original film's 13-month cycle. Large sections of the film were scrapped at the poorly received test screenings. New scenes were written and filmed during reshoots between March and April 1989. Only 2 months before its release, Ghostbusters 2 was released on June 16, 1989, to generally negative reviews. Critics responded unfavorably to what they perceived as largely a copy of the original and a softening of its cynical, dark humor to be more family friendly, although the performances of Peter McNichol and Moranis were repeatedly singled out for praise. As the sequel to the then highest grossing comedy film of all time, Ghostbusters 2 was expected to dominate the box office. Instead, the film earned $215.4 million during its theatrical run compared with the original's $282.2 million, making it the eighth highest grossing film of the year. Columbia Pictures deemed it a financial and critical failure, the effect of which dissuaded Murray from participating in the third Ghostbusters film. Its soundtrack single On Our Own by Bobby Brown was a success, spending 20 weeks on the United States music charts. The film failed to replicate the cultural impact and following of Ghostbusters. Although some retrospective critics praised it, Ghostbusters 2 is generally seen as a poor follow-up to Ghostbusters and responsible for stalling the franchise for decades. The film spawned a series of merchandise, including video games, board games, comic books, music, toys, and haunted houses. Despite the relative failure of Ghostbusters 2, a second sequel was pursued through to the early 2010s. A financially unsuccessful 2016 series reboot led to renewed efforts on the sequel to Ghostbusters 2, titled Ghostbusters Afterlife, which I will review next, which was released in 2021. Now, let's see. So, I don't usually go over the special effects, but since I'm there, let's go over it. Okay, so as with his work on Ghostbusters, Rittman had little interest in the technical side of his film. For the sequel, he employed special effects studio Industrial Light and Magic, giving them a rough outline of the plot and the freedom to do as they wanted. Columbia had previously helped Richard Edlund found special effects company Boss Film Studios for Ghostbusters. But Rittman was reported to be unhappy with their work. Edlund's former ILM co-worker Dennis Murin served as the visual effects supervisor. Despite the film's intentionally rushed schedule, Murin wanted to work on the film because it would let him design new creatures. Murin admitted that his designs would not be as original as Ghostbusters and instead wanted to make them more flexible and ghostly. The team was originally hired to provide 110 effects shots, but this grew to 180. ILM was also working on special effects for other 1989 releases, Back to the Future Part 2, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and The Abyss, but had the most difficulty with Ghostbusters 2 because designs and concepts were constantly changing and new scenes were being added. ILM eventually refused to accept any further alterations. As the schedule tightened, ILM had 9 teams working every day for 4 weeks to complete the expanded 180 shots and had to outsource some of the extra work to visual concept engineering, available light, character shop, and uncredited Tippett Studio. Apogee Productions handled many of the effects for the reshoots. Slime. Methocel, a vegetable-based gel, was used to create the slime. Food coloring was added. The colors included green to match Slimer and blue. Physical effects supervisor Chuck Gaspar marked up differently colored batches, and Rittman settled on pink. The film required approximately 100,000 U.S. gallons of slime. 4 cement mixers were kept on site to mix fresh batches daily because it deteriorated quickly. Mica dust and mineral oil were added for the river of slime. The dust added depth to the river, while the oil created varying shapes on its surface. The river of slime in the Van House pneumatic transit station was a miniature model with the plexiglass trout 1 foot wide and 10 feet long. It operated in a gravity pump and was fed from a large tank 15 feet above it. After reaching the end of the river, the slime fell into another tank from which it was fed back to the upper tank. Air injectors and puppeteered baffles were used to create bubbles and manipulate the slime to flow as though something was moving beneath the surface. Small slime tentacles were created using vinyl covered sticks operated from below. The large tentacle was plastic and was filmed against a blue screen as it fell away from a stand-in's boot. The footage was then played in reverse so the tentacle would appear to be grabbing at Ackroyd. The Van Home scene combined the miniature river Matte paintings of the station and a practical sets for stairs leading to a tunnel. The scene in which Ackroyd, Ramis, and Hudson fall into the river was considered one of the most difficult effects to achieve. The actors were filmed falling from the Van home set, which was composited, with the miniature river. Hudson's character being dragged away by the slime's current was filmed against a blue screen, so he would appear in the river. His motion in the river had to be animated by hand against the river's natural movements. I'm sorry for the butcher, folks, but I'm just trying to get through this episode. Creative effects. The returning Slimer ghost was redeveloped to be more child-friendly. Like this popular, the real Ghostbusters incarnation. His face, which was controlled with wires and cables in Ghostbusters, was now controlled by servo motors and had a pneumatic jaw. Pneumatic jaw. Bobby Porter was hired to wear the Slimer's costume until the character was removed from the film entirely. A few weeks later, Slimer was reinserted, but by this time, Porter was not available and was replaced by Robin Shelby. The Scolari brother ghosts, Tony and Nunzio, were inspired by a pair of brothers who robbed Ramis's father's store. Creative designer Tim Lawrence was influenced by the musical comedy The Blues Brothers, which starred Aykroyd and featured two brothers, one of whom was tall and thin, and the other short and fat. The brothers were given a cartoonish design to counter the film's scary moments. Lawrence aimed to represent the characters' evil rather than their pre-death appearances. Camilla Henneman created most of Nunzio using spandex pouches filled with gelatinous material to make him appear impossibly fat. The costume was worn by Lawrence. The impossibly thin Tony was designed as a life-size puppet, but Murin thought this approach would impact the filming schedule. Tony was reworked as a costume that was worn by actor Jim Fei. It was given elongated appendages to appear unnaturally thin. Oh shit, that's crazy. The ghost faces were articulated with motors and pneumatics created by mechanical animator Al Coulter and his team. Lawrence also developed an animation system to allow the mask to lip sync dialogue, alongside early concepts of the ghost walking and creating explosive ruptures with each step. Most of these features were abandoned in the final film. Lawrence later said, without those features, the same effect could have been created with a 1/3 scale puppet. The brothers' electric chairs were miniatures composited into footage of the seated costume actors. Distortion effects, such as the ghost being squeezed, were created using completed effect shots that were re-photographed through Mylar material that could be wrapped to affect the underlying image. For the scene in which Nunzio carries the prosecutor upside down from the courtroom, a stunt woman was hung upside down on a rail. Rittman wanted her to pass through the doorway while seeing above it. Gaspar's team created a passage made of foam above a door that resembled the iron grill. The foam was spring-loaded so that when the wire passed through, the set sprang back into place quickly. The effect was hidden behind a composite of Nunzio. Full-scale cutouts of the ghosts were used during filming to aid the actors. Ghostbusters storyboard artist Tom Enriquez storyboarded the scene. He found the process difficult because the limited schedule meant the courtroom was being built as he worked. He was also restricted by the budget, saying he could use only 14 chairs. I could also blow up 4 pillars and 1 wall of glass. Okay. The animated Statue of Liberty was conceived by Ackroyd, who liked the idea of taking a static image and making it move about, comparing it with seeing the Eiffel Tower moving or Victoria Falls flowing in reverse. The statue's role was originally written as a weapon for Vigo, but this idea did not progress the narrative. The effect was a combination of a costume worn by Fi, miniatures and larger than life size elements, like the statue crown, which in reality was too small to let the Ghostbusters peer out. The crown was mounted on a gimbal, allowing it to be pivoted as though its wearer was walking. Rittman ordered the crown to be tied down further than the actors were expecting to elicit from them a genuine reaction of surprise. The upper body was modeled and filmed at night in a makeshift pool to show it emerging from the ocean. Fi also portrayed the ghost of a Central Park jogger. Let me see. Yeah. All right, I'm going to actually go to the reception. Yeah, I didn't go to the reception. I didn't even see that. All right, let's go to technology, man. No, first let's go to Vigo the campaign. Yeah. The concept for the physical form of the central villain Vigo went through many changes, including a plan to transform him into a large monstrosity. There was difficulty determining how Vigo would interact outside his painting. Vigo was intended to have heavier creature makeup, but after von Hunberg was cast, his distinctive look meant the extra makeup was largely unnecessary. In early 1989, ILM contacted Glenn Itchison to develop a painting that could come to life. Itchison specialized in table ux variants, the use of static sets and stationary actors to create the illusion of a flat painting. While Murray said that his team, they could have worked out a way to achieve the desired effect, they did not have enough time and needed to enlist an expert. The aim was to depict what happened to be a painting of Vigo and that would come to life to shock the audience. ILM spent months producing concepts of the paintings look, but Rittman rejected them for being too similar to Conan the Barbarian. Edgerton and his team researched the look of a 16th century warlord and references the period's painters to match the contemporaneous art styles. Okay, Itchison's team painted a background and individual item, including skies, skulls, and trees on acetate. This allowed Rittman to view combinations quickly. He chose his favorite design in 15 minutes. Local painter Lou Police. Lou Police. Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, that shit is funny. Produced a painting from this concept. Rittman approved it, but Itchison realized a painting would not be realistic enough to allow them to switch between it and the actor. Itchison's team decided to create a small set resembling the painting. It had structural elements, including styrofoam skulls, in which von Homburg could stand. Von Homburg's costume and the set were painted by the same team to ensure they had the same texture and blended together. Once the set arrived at ILM, von Homburg was positioned in it wearing full costume, makeup, and prosthetics. Lighting was used to eliminate shadows, creating a flat image. A photograph was then taken and enlarged to be used as the painting. Welsh's department treated the photograph to make it closely resemble an oil painting. Scenes of von Homburg on the set delivering his dialogue and stepping out of the set as if leaving the painting were filmed. According to Itchison, the actor struggled with the action and Rittman did not like the effect. The ending was changed completely, eliminating the living picture concept when Viggo interacts from the painting in the finished film. The image is replaced by von Homburg's disembodied head floating over a miniature river of slime set built from foam by ILM. When leaving the painting, Viggo disappears and materializes into the scene. Another concept had him peel from the canvas, and another had the slime bring other paintings to life to aid him. A molded mask was created to represent his inner evil. It was worn by Harold Weed. Oh, shit. Harold Weed. Oh, shit. Oh, that's fucking insane, man. As the possessed version of Ackroyd's character. So we go to the technology right here. Ghostbusters hardware consultant Stephen Dane was responsible for much of the Ghostbusters equipment and their vehicle. The Ectomobile, he designed new equipment for Ghostbusters 2 in an uncredited role. Dane revised the designs of the proton pack weapons, the ghost trap, and the Ectomobile, which became the Ectomobile 1A. Dane designed the new equipment, including the Giga Meter, the Slime Scooper, and the Slime Blower, a large tank connected to a slime spewing nozzle. He repurposed leftover prop warning labels and symbols from his work on Blade Runner 1982 to make the equipment look more authentic. The slime blower weapons were 3 times heavier than the portion packs. The tanks did not contain slime, which was pumped through the guns from off camera. The bulky proton packs, which were considered heavy and uncomfortable during the filming of Ghostbusters, were redesigned to weigh 28 pounds in comparison with the 30-pound and 50-pound versions used on the previous film. The new design offered more comfort while removing some of the powdered effects. Murin's team redesigned the proton pack. Neutrino wand beams to be multifunctional, allowing them to be used as lassos or fishing lines to catch a ghost instead of being straight beams. Five remotely controlled baby strollers were used to create the possessed stroller in the film's opening. Motors and drive shafts were concealed with the stroller's chrome body and brakes that could stop it immediately or slow it gradually were used. Gaspar employed two-time national miniature car champion Jay Halsey to drive the stroller. He had to weave it between traffic from up to 75 feet away. I don't think there's any I don't think there's any awards that they were this is crazy, man. Yeah, I don't think there's any awards and stuff. So let's go to we're gonna go to, hang on a minute here. There's another movie I wanted to actually, we're gonna review Ghostbusters Afterlife. Just give me a second. Before I go on, man, let me just say something actually. The reason why I'm not reviewing the 2016 version is because it actually stunk on ice. There was some controversy surrounding the 2016 version, and I didn't want to really, I didn't see the movie, by the way, because it had all the women in that cast, which didn't really make it didn't make any fucking sense to me, man, to be honest with you. And I never liked it because the way I see it from when I was watching the cartoon Ghostbusters, let me just put myself back on screen. Hold on a second. So the way I see it is when I was watching Ghostbusters as I was little, it was mostly men, you know? And for the simple fact that it just went into the fucking crapper. Why in the hell would you cast women in a Ghostbusters movie reboot? Why would you do that? That's fucking insane to me, man. Yeah, that's insane, man. And another reason why I'm not gonna review the 2016 version is because why the hell would you fucking mess up the story on the idea of Ghostbusters, man, to even think that somebody in the whole fucking world would actually ask for a Ghostbusters female cast? That's just crazy to me, man. And this shit needs to be flushed, man, for real. Yeah, water go down the hole. Oh man. Wow. I had to do it, man. Okay, Ghostbusters Afterlife is a 2021 American supernatural comedy film directed by Jason Reitman and written by Reitman and Gil Keenan. It also stars Carrie Coon, Finn Wolfhard. Oh man. Oh shit. McKenna Grace, Bukim Woodbine, Paul Rudd, Logan Kim, and Celeste O'Connor. It is the sequel to Ghostbusters 1984 and Ghostbusters 2 1989, and the fourth film in the Ghostbusters franchise, set 32 years after the events of Ghostbusters 2 and Ghostbusters have disbanded and their legacy is mostly forgotten. After a single mother and her children moved to an Oklahoma farm inherited from her estranged father, they discovered that he was a former Ghostbuster on a mission to prevent the end of the world. Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, Annie Potts, and Sigourney Weaver feature in supporting roles reprising their characters from the previous films. So the budget was $75 million, and in the box office it did $191.4 million. A third Ghostbusters film had been in development since Ghostbusters 2, but stalled as Murray refused to return to the series. After cast member Harold Ramis died in 2014, Sony produced a female-driven reboot directed by Paul Feig and released in 2016. At the Feige film drew controversy and underperformed commercially. Jason Reitman developed a sequel to the original films. The new cast was announced by July 2019, while the original cast signed on 2 months later. It is posthumously dedicated to Ramis, who is commemorated in the closing credits. Filming took place from July to October 2019. Ghostbusters Afterlife was screened unannounced on October 23rd, 2021, during the 2021 CinemaCon event in Las Vegas. It was released in the United States on November 19, 2021, after being delayed 4 times from an original July 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic, aka Slamdemic. The film received mixed to positive reviews from critics who praised the performances, Reitman direction, the tribute to Ramis and nostalgic tone, but criticized the screenplay and fan service. It has grossed over $191 million worldwide with a production budget of $75 million, which I just discussed. We're going to go to the reception. On the review aggregator website, Rotten Tomatoes, 62% of 282 reviews are positive, with an average rating of 6.10 out of 10. The website's critical consensus reads, Ghostbusters Afterlife crosses the streams between franchise revival and exercise in nostalgia. And this time around, the bussing mostly feels good. Metacritic, which uses a weighted average, assigned the film a score of 45 out of 100 based on 47 critics, indicating mixed or average reviews. Audiences polled by CinemaScore gave the film an average grade of A- on an A+ to F scale, while those at PostTrack gave it an 82% positive score, with 69% saying they would definitely recommend it. Sherry Linden of The Hollywood Reporter described the film's cast as engaging and having the comic beats down, and added they also play more fully fleshed people than the first film offered, reflecting the director's interest in character-driven stories. She also noted some similarities the film had with Stranger Things, The Wizard of Oz, and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Ollie Richards of Empire gave the film a score of 4 out of 5, describing it as being thoroughly lovely and concluding that it firmly establishes its own new generation while being full of love for the originals. Peter DeBruge of Variety described the film as unnecessary, but enjoyable movie, and added, the good news for Ghostbusters fans is that Afterlife does nothing to tarnish what has come before. William Bibbiani of The Rat wrote that fans of the original, especially the ones who love finding Easter eggs, will probably be satisfied. But added, in quote, those who enjoyed the 1984 film and who actually wanted a new installment of Ghostbusters to offer something different may be disappointed, but they can probably settle for Afterlife's slick and straightforward formulaic craftsmanship. Scott Medelson of Forbes gave the film a score of 6 out of 10, describing it as a charming and witty kid-centric coming-of-age fantasy, but criticized its reliance on pandering nostalgic fan service. Kyle Smith of National Review described the film as a winsome, endearing summer movie for November, a cunningly engineered generational bridge. Guardian critic Charles Bramsko gave it 1 out of 5, finding it lacked the humor of the original Ghostbusters, instead resembled an Amblin knockoff similar to the TV series Stranger Things. Bramsko concluded that it was a nostalgia object drained of personality and fitted into a dully palatable mold custom made for a fandom that worships everything and respects nothing. Okay. So as of this year, of January 22nd, Alliance of Women Film Journalists, the sequel or remake that shouldn't have been made, Ghostbusters Afterlife, Best Visual Effects. No, hold on. Las Vegas Films Critics Society Awards, December 13th, Best Visual Effects, Best Youth in Film, Female, got a nomination. Music City Film Critics Association Awards, January 25th. Young actress McKenna Grace is basically pending right now, so there's no info right now. San Diego Film Critics Society, January 10th, Best Youth Performance, runner-up. Sunset Circle Awards, December 2nd, 2021, Best Family Film, Ghostbusters Afterlife. Ghostbusters Afterlife got a nomination. Okay, all right. So we're gonna go over Extreme Ghostbusters, right? Give me one second. Need to actually see this. Okay, hold on a minute here. All right. Okay, let me go to, hang on a minute. Hold on. All right. So there's two cartoons that I want to actually go over, the animated television series of the real Ghostbusters. Okay, so The Real Ghostbusters is an American animated television series, a spin-off sequel of the 1984 comedy movie Ghostbusters. The series ran from September 13, 1986 to October 5, 1981. It was produced by Columbia Pictures Television and DIC Enterprises and distributed by Coca-Cola Telecommunications. Of course, the voice actors are Lorenzo Music. Oh shit. Maurice LaMarche, Frank Welker, Arsenio Hall, Dave Collier, Buster Jones, Laura Summer, Kath Soucy, and Jeff Altman. Of course, let me see. Yeah. So the series continues the adventures of paranormal investigators Dr. Peter Venkman, Dr. Egon Spengler, Dr. Ray Stantz, Winston Zeddemore, their secretary Janine Melnitz, and their mascot Ghost Slimer. The Real was added to the title after a dispute with Filmation and its Ghostbusters properties. There also were two ongoing Real Ghostbusters comics, one published monthly by Now Comics in the United States, and the other published weekly by Marvel Comics. In the United Kingdom, Kenner produced a line of action figures and play sets based on the cartoon. Okay. Reception. The series received critical acclaim since its premiere. The first season received an approval rating of 100% of review aggregated Rotten Tomatoes based on 5 reviews. Common Sense Media gave the series a 3 out of 5 stars. Writing animated series expands on the beloved 80s comedy, which I will agree on. And we have another one, which is Extreme Ghostbusters. Okay. This might be the last one of the review. Extreme Ghostbusters is an American animated television series, a follow-up to the animated series The Real Ghostbusters. It is a part of the Ghostbusters franchise. The series originally aired on the syndicated BKN block in 1997 and features a team of younger college-level Ghostbusters who are led by veteran Ghostbuster Egon Spengler. In some TV listings, the series was called Ghostbusters Dark. Now we go to the voice actors, which is Tara Strong, Maurice LaMarche, Jason Marsden, Pat Music, Alfonso Rivero, Rhino Romano, and Billy West. We go to the reception and legacy. It's kind of weird. In a retrospective of the show, SFX referred to the consensus that any extension of the Ghostbusters brand requires a whole new team of newbies to take on the mantle, and that Extreme Ghostbusters was the first time it was put into practice. The failure of the show blamed by the showrunners on poor U.S. scheduling and the decline of non-educational children syndication in favor of carriage on networks such as Fox Kids and Kids WB and the cable channels, of course, broadcast mid-morning and slot only suitable for preschools, though some American stations still did carry the show between 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. in the after-school period, was seen by SFX as showing the appeal of Ghostbusters was only partially the concept, that it's the characters we love above all must be sobering. must be a sobering thought for anyone charged with rebooting Ghostbusters again. The show was also noted for being aimed at a slightly more adolescent audience with a tougher edge, clearly intended to test the boundaries of child-friendly horror. And the Eduardo Kylie relationship pushed the edges of the ratings. Okay. And honestly, there is the video game. I didn't even know they made a video game for Ghostbusters. That's crazy. That's crazy, man. So the cartoon series generated a line of action figures released by Trendmasters. The line included Roland, Eduardo, Kylie, and several ghosts, as well as an updated version of Egon Spengler and the Ecto-1. Garrett did not have a figure released, although collectors have found a prototype figure. Also released was a role-playing Proton Pack and Ghost Trap. So the website, the original website still available online, contained a flash tour of the Firehouse character profiles, descriptions of the ghost fort, and a flash game. Some of the character details in the profiles had never made it into an episode. The Spangler's Spirit guide section contained journal entries by Egon himself about haunted areas and the how-to of ghosting. No, excuse me, ghostbusting. Two of the entries, the Bermuda Triangle and the Jersey Devil, were topics that showed up in episodes. And the video game part, three video games based on the series were also created: Extreme Ghostbusters for the Game Boy Color, Extreme Ghostbusters Cold Ecto-1 for Game Boy Advance, and Extreme Ghostbusters The Ultimate Invasion for the PlayStation. There are also two PC games, Extreme Ghostbusters Zap the Ghost and Extreme Ghostbusters Creativity Center. Okay. Hold on for 1 second. Let me take this drink. So stay with me, folks. Hold on, let me see. Yeah. Okay. I think I'm gonna wrap this show up right here, though, man. You know what I mean? So, look, you like what you heard in today's show today? Feel free to show some love and making a charitable donation to my Cash App, which is GMoneyStacks555. That's $ capital G, lowercase M-O-N-E-Y, capital S, lowercase T-A-C-K-Z, 555. Once again, it's not about breaking the bank, folks. It's all about doing the best you can on whatever amount you are comfortable with will be appreciated. And you don't have to stress yourself out on having a lot of money to morally support somebody that's doing a project like a podcast or any other type of hustle. You know what I mean? And speaking of side hustles, you can follow the show Meticulous Vibe Juice Podcast on Instagram, alongside with my other shows, Excellent Fun Vibrant Podcast, The Sports Edition Show, and the number one show that reached 103 episodes is Off the Meat Rat Chains New York Podcast. On Facebook and Instagram, make sure you catch up on previous episodes of all three shows. I just did 103 already. It will be posted on Monday. And I just did episode 9, which I already posted it already on streaming platforms for Excellent Fun Vibrant Podcast, the Sports Edition Show. And of course, you can follow me on the gram, which is GMoneyStacks555 in Queens, New York. Make sure you turn on your notifications, because you never know when I'm going to go on Instagram Live again, which most likely I will be going on Instagram Live on the Off the Meat Rat Chains New York podcast show page. So, once again, let me just remind you on Meticulous Vibe Juice podcast review show is on Mondays and Tuesdays at 6 p.m., Thursdays at 9 p.m. Excellent Fun Vibrant Podcast Sports Edition show is Sundays at 6 p.m. And Off the Meat Rack Chains New York podcast is on Wednesdays, Thursdays at 6 p.m. and Saturdays at 10 p.m. All right. So there you go. Make sure you turn your notifications on Instagram for me. And you can follow me on 17 Live at G Money Stacks, Queens, New York. That's 17 Live, G Money Stacks, Queens, New York. All right. Now we're going to go over, streaming platforms on the go. All right. Yeah, we're going to go over the streaming platforms on the go where you can listen to the show. So give me one second. Hang on. All right. So, make sure you subscribe to all the streaming platforms that I am about to mention. Now, when you are on the Instagram show page on Meticulous Vibe Juice Podcast, which is where I'm recording from, make sure you actually be able to go to the link in the bio where it says Linktree/Meticulous Vibe Juice Podcast. So, as I go over, we're going to go to, we're going to go to where you could actually, listen to, which is Anchor, Audible, Audacity, Amazon Music, Breaker, Castbox FM, Deezer, Listen Notes, Moon FM Podcast, the newly added addition to the streaming platform, Player FM, Pocket Cast, Podfriend, Podopolo, Podorama, Podcast Index, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Reason FM, and Spotify. Don't forget to leave a 5-star rating on Podchaser, Podfriend, and Spotify. Spotify just added a way where you could actually, give a rating to it. That's for the listeners, you know what I mean? We are also on Stitcher. We are on TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts. Don't forget to listen to Meticulous Vibe Juice Podcast Review Show on Radio Public. We are on iHeartRadio, the number one app for music, radio, and podcasts. And last but not least, the YouTube. And on the YouTube, you go ahead and subscribe to the YouTube channel and make sure you enable alerts with the notification bell. And be sure that you stay tuned for more video content, upcoming episodes, previous episodes that was already recorded that will automatically be posted to the YouTube channel page. And basically, make sure you download your favorite episodes. Make sure you leave a like and a comment. On top of that, share the videos, share the episodes. Tell a friend to another friend. Make sure you share the podcast along with audio streaming platforms with your friends. And the link that says Linktree/MeticulousVodjuice Podcast, all right? And listen, like I always say at the end of the show, make sure you take care of one another. Be mindful of the people that you're being around with during the slamdemic, especially when it comes to mental health. Make sure you reach out to your loved ones, including the people like your wives, your husbands, your friends, your boyfriends and girlfriends. Those individuals might be fine on the outside, but on the inside, they are not. So what you want to do is basically make sure that you reach out to them and to show some compassion. Make sure you show compassion, make sure you show empathy as well. Because that's important as well. You know what I mean? And for the most part, you want to make sure that you want to make sure you follow your mind, your soul, your heart, and your instincts, and, you know, take a risk, because you don't have to wait till Mental Health Awareness Month, like May and Mental Health Day, to actually, you know, reach out to somebody, because it's 365 days in a year. And for the most part, what you want to do is, you know, show some compassion, show that you care, that you want to be there for the person, even though it might be, that person might be going through something scary, something challenging, whether it's like, you know, health related issues or whatever. You just make sure that you're there for them at all times. So, you know what I mean? So basically, yeah. So also, some free game on how to start a podcast, right? Okay, so there's three important equipment that you need to start a podcast. What you want to do is, the first thing you need is some headphones. And of course, you need a microphone like I'm using right now. It doesn't have to be anything too expensive. It could be a Yeti microphone. It could be an Avoxcon microphone, which I bought from Target. Yeah, Target is where I bought it from. Also, what you want to do is basically make sure you have a laptop or a computer. And if you have a laptop or a computer, you'll basically be able to do your live streams on YouTube, whatever place you do your live streams and stuff. You also want to make sure you actually are able to, you know, follow your dreams. You know what I mean? That's very important that you follow your goals and dreams of what you're trying to do. And if you're creating the name of the show, make sure it is something that nobody has never heard before. And don't worry about the garbage hater burgers from the Hatermobile, man. That's actually, you know, hating on you with all the stupid fucking critiques and shit, man. Don't worry about them fuckers, okay? It's all about you making yourself happy, not about them. You know what I'm saying? And what you want to do is picture them as food to eat. And you eat them up with your success. And you show them how great you are. All right? You don't have to tell people how great you are and how you are the best at certain things. You just have to show them by eating them up Homer Simpson style like this. So yeah. Also, some free game on a software that I am using. I'm using a software called StreamYard, which connects to my YouTube channel. And it is a software that allows you to create talking points through creating banners, like for segments, whether it's for talking points. You have the, of course, the name of the show that you see on your screen right here, and the banners scrolling across your screen where you can follow the show, where you can reach me, and all that other stuff. In case you guys need a little guidance and help on how to start a podcast in terms of equipment and all the other stuff. So, you know, it's all about inspiring people and giving people motivation on how to, you know, not give up on your goals and dreams. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like, you know, even though I feel like a mentor, I actually was helping somebody a couple weeks ago, and she has a show called You Are Glowing Podcast, and you guys can make sure you actually check that show out, which is by Cindy, aka Pink Rice, and Coco. Make sure you check them out on Spotify. Of course, Anchor, there's iHeartRadio and other streaming platforms wherever you get your podcasts and shit. So, you know what I mean? Make sure you follow them. Follow You Are Glowing Podcast on Instagram. And, of course, you know, that's going to do it for me, man. I'm G-Money Stacks. Thank you so much for tuning in and rocking with me on episode 43. I will see you on the next episode. Make sure you be careful and be mindful of the people you're being around with, whether you are in vans, taxis, subways, LARR, Metro North, the buses, whatever state you're living in. Make sure you be mindful of the people you surround yourself with. Especially those who are, you know, who are basically idiots who don't want to wear face covers, which I'm not going to get into. So, yeah. I'm going to be out of here, man. Make sure you have your hand sanitizer. Make sure you have your water with soap. Make sure you have your water and Gatorade for electrolytes, for energy and strength. And yeah, and by the way, my favorite quote is about, it's not about people's opinions. It's about your actions that matters. All right. You matter mentally, physically, and spiritually. All right, remember that. I'm G Money Stacks clocking out. Thank you for watching and listening. I appreciate every single one of you that's tuning in from all over the world. Queens, certain parts of New York, certain parts of the USA, a little bit of Canada, trying to get through all these places and stuff. So anyway, peace and one love, and I'll see you next time on the next episode of Meticulous Vibe Juice Podcast Review Show. And you guys enjoy your night. Check this out, folks. If you like what you heard, I need your help on a couple of things. I need you to go follow the show's page on Instagram, Meticulous Vibe Juice Podcast, alongside with Off the Meat Rat Chains New York Podcast. And you can follow me also on my primary handle on the gram, which is GMoneyStacks555 in Queens, New York, for more postings of each episode with the topics. Also, go to YouTube and grab the subscribe button, enable alerts of the notification bell so you can be reminded of when the show goes on the air live via live stream. More video content, like, comment on the episodes with the topics, upcoming episodes, previous episodes that will automatically be posted to the YouTube channel page. Share the videos, spread the word. Be sure to download your favorite episodes. Tell a friend to tell another friend. Share the podcast with audio streaming platforms with your friends. And also tell us what you think about the episodes and the topics, and what you thought about the topics as well. And what topics you think we should talk about next to review. I'm G Money Stacks. Thank you for listening to the show. Peace and one love.